Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of our discussion of the defense against the Packers. We're doing this at 4:30 p.m. It's now about 5:35. After a very happy afternoon of watching the Pittsburgh Steelers fall in Cleveland, joining me for the discussion again is Coach Evans. Coach, how you doing?
I am glad to be back. Excited to talk a little ball and see what we got coming forward with our Baltimore Ravens.
Take a listen to that first episode of you. This is part two you're listening to now. If you missed the first episode somehow, some great stuff. We talked about the Ravens getting beat on some deep plays that included a mesh concept play where Watson crossed the field and Reed and Starks basically caused a train wreck with Gilman that forced him off the play. And a coach talked about how he coaches that play with a tag concept. You want to just give a brief insight of this? They'll go back.
So what we do is the guy on the right, the receiver on the right side, they have a mesh point. But what they do is I teach the right receiver to tag the left receiver when they cross with his left hand, and then the left receiver would tag the right receiver with his right hand. That way, when they cross, they can slap off, and they don't have the opportunity of running into each other, but you still create the term Ken used, the chicken with the DBs. So somebody, they're all four guys going to be running almost on the same plane. There's going to be a half a yard, not even a half of a yard, change as to where my mesh guys will mesh, and the defenders got to pick something. If you go underneath, you probably give up the big play. If you go over top, you give up a definitely short route, and now you got to tackle. So creating that chicken is what they do, and I give the offensive guys an opportunity not to run into each other by telling them to do that with their hands.
All right, great stuff. And more coaching stuff came up. One thing we talked about a little bit was, you know, that this is just around the break we talked about this, was the fact that the 2025 Ravens season has actual life now. They're going to, for the ninth consecutive season, they have played zero games when they did not start that game with a chance to win the Super Bowl. Think about that. Zero games since 2016, sorry, that they played with no chance to win the Super Bowl. And they're going to go into next week and they still have a chance to win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm really having difficulty with is the number of people who want to chime in on their own feelings about what 2026 should look like. All of the following have been talked about: getting rid of Marlon Humphrey, getting rid of Roquan Smith.
Yep.
All sorts of other rebuilds for the team and how you want the draft to look like. The big one, obviously, is getting rid of John Harbaugh, but also Orrin Monken are in that group of hot seaters. Can we, for just the next week at least, and hopefully for 5 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now, talk about this team's 2025 chances without it having to be a referendum on every one of these other stupid issues? They will resolve themselves. Every one of these, some of them are important, and they will get resolved. Right. Why do we have to have everything be how does this affect the chance of John Harbaugh being fired?
Now, you know, whether you want him fired or not, my thing is be where your feet at. And we still have an actual chance. And I mentioned it to you during a break. Like a lot of people in the middle of the season when we were one in whatever, season, go get, reboot or whatever. No, I'm not a quitter. Don't tank the season. You got some winnable games afterwards, which we won. And, some stuff still happened that we not proud of, but be where your feet at. I'm too much of a competitor to tank anything. And I don't want teams that I root for to tank. It's just not in my blood. That's quitter mentality. That's weak. And you know, whether you want John here or Todd here or Zach Orr here, and I'll focus on Todd because Todd is the guy that I defend a lot. What was wrong with yesterday? Then we got Sunday coming up. Just let's see what happens in 2025 before we just be all in on 2026. If we were the three and something, understandable.
This is one thing about Monken that has come up a lot is people will say, doesn't it just piss you off now that they could have played the power scheme the entire time and they knew it, but or they just couldn't realize it for all this time. And they're trying to mostly get Harbaugh fired for this, or maybe they're trying to get Monken fired for this, or maybe they're trying to get the offensive line coach fired for this. I'm not sure exactly what, but again, we know where we are now. Mm-hmm. The power game did work wonderfully well. The power game has a chance to work against Pittsburgh, although they're not nearly as bad off as, particularly with Harmon back, as the Packers were last night.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, sometimes it's the players.
Mm-hmm. So really, oh, the players are occasionally responsible for the
there's a certain individual that despite us running for 300 yards, ain't looked great last night. Mm-hmm. But that's an offensive episode. We ain't gonna talk about that today. But just know there are certain individuals. It ain't all the coaches. And there are some coaches there has been some coaching malfeasance, but we still got a chance to win the Super Bowl. We still got a chance to get in the playoffs. That's where I want to put my focus at. Because I could easily be in draft season doing draft stuff. But as long as we got a chance to still play, I'm going to be with my feet at. And don't tank me. Don't cheat me out of a good football game. Don't cheat the people that are paying to go to these games with some crap like that.
There you go. I'm particularly bothered by that. But my fans know just how pissed off I am as a season ticket holder when a team or worse that the couch potatoes tell the team to tank while I'm going to the games. It's not cool. Anyway, let's talk about individual players. Who would you like to talk about?
Travis Jones. I have been, even before the contract, I have been on this Travis Jones train, and we make predictions about players, and Travis just happens to be one of them players that proved me right. Double teamed. When he's not double teamed, he's kicking people's butt. And even sometimes when he double teams, he finds a way to split it or to keep those guys from getting the second level. And I think, even though he's not out there now, I think Buchanan benefited the most from having Travis Jones in front of him. Hmm. Buchanan was, when he figured some stuff out, he was able to fly around and be in his gap and handle his gap freely, or even get through the backfield because Travis was commanding double teams. And Rowe has benefited from it too, but Rowe's a veteran, so that's why I didn't bring him up too much. But Travis has got you pass rush, interior pass rush, which we talked about in the first episode, which is invaluable. He's stopping the run, and then he's creating plays for other people, which, so I'm ecstatic about Travis. I think we got him on a deal that is beneficial to the team and not him.
I want him to be happy with this deal, but mm-hmm. I think they did get a terrific price for him, frankly. Frankly, it's an unforgivable mistake from your agent that you end up in a position where you're out leveraged. But the Ravens, mm-hmm. the Ravens seem to get him here with that. I tried to pull up my expectations for Travis Jones from this year, from the expectation shows, and see what we had, see if we could call this a great season already. But I don't think there's any doubt that he's become the player that I kind of hoped he would be at about the 80th percentile. Just very excited about who he is. He was for all this year. And coach, I don't know how much you listen to my stuff, but we've been talking about him being the most important of the big three for the Ravens to re-sign among likely Linderbaum and him. Okay. Jones was the guy that I wanted the most of those three, and they got him cheap as heck.
Yep.
And you know, anyway,
then that big three, I definitely feel like he's the priority out of the three. Yeah.
Are you going out? You can talk about it on the, I know it's defensive show, but how far would you go on Tyler Linderbaum?
Oof. Yeah, I like Tyler. I would love to have him around, but not for the price that middle price for those top five centers. Not that price. Especially, and I don't know if it's because of the play of the guards, but Tyler he didn't ascend this year. Mm-hmm. And my personal opinion, all five of them regressed.
All five. Okay, so Stanley, I think Stanley might have had a slightly better year, but you might be right. He might have regressed. Voorhees didn't take a step forward. Linderbaum, I would agree, regressed. And then we've got Falele, who definitely took a step back, certainly from the last five games last year when he looked really good. That was mm-hmm. that's just so frustrating that he hasn't been able to live up to it. Maybe the power scheme is going to help him get back to it. And then Rosengarten, actually, I think, has probably taken a very slight step forward. I think they've given him less help this year, mm-hmm. and he's done more with it.
But I do agree with that. He hasn't had nearly as much help as he had last year. And I think maybe that's because, you know, second year, probably a little better. But, you know, and he could be the borderline guy. But I lumped them all in because I feel like the offensive line is a whole regressed. And if I went and did stats or research on it, he may not have. But as a whole, the big picture, I feel like they all regressed.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the issues with this line is just it's difficult to fix because they don't have two great players and two terrible players. That's like an ideal situation. And you have one intermediate player and you can give him another chance, but you get rid of your two lousy players. Mm-hmm. It's easier to make improvements that way. When you have 5 C players, that's when it's the hardest to fix. And, you know, they got like 5 guys who are between a C plus and a C minus, pretty much as I see it. You know, Falele might be a C minus D plus border, but he's not at the replacement level either that other people think he is. Very frustratingly indecisive.
Ask you a question.
Yeah.
And I've been saying this all season. A lot of people don't agree with me. And I'm glad I haven't seen your opinion on this. Who's worse?
Of the Voorhees or Falele?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they've each been frustrating in their own different ways. Voorhees is not the ideal shape for a guard because he's not a pear-shaped guard that gives him a lot of trouble in pass protection. Falele doesn't have that same set of problems, but he has no idea what he's going to do next. He's played actually a little bit better as a run blocker in recent weeks. Voorhees has had some good games. He really pulled well for a while, and I'm trying to pull the good and the bad, but he's mm-hmm. been, generally speaking, he's been worse as a pass blocker, and that's the more important thing. So I would say that Falele and him are very close, but I would mm-hmm. say Falele has been probably slightly better in my opinion.
I agree 100%. Okay. 100%. Now, Falele's misses have been like loud and not highlight, but whatever the opposite of highlight is, plays. But consistent little things, like almost every other play, Voorhees.
Okay, so you got two guards here. Voorhees has 2 years of runway left, of 2 years of team control. And if you look, this is something I really want to do, but I want to like map out the scores of the offensive linemen from years 1 through 4 and show how much improvement there's been. Because typically, and this may be a coaching staff that doesn't exist anymore, there's been a lot of improvement for the Ravens linemen from 1 to 4, such that a lot of them don't even get to play until year 3, and then they're mm-hmm. really good in year 4. Ben Powers, Ryan Jensen,
Bredesen.
Bredesen, we traded him early. So, you know, a lot of the guys, they play later and then they become good. And you just got to have a little bit of patience with it. And then there's mm-hmm. also Ben Cleveland, who played better early and then kind of never got his head back into the game, it looks like.
Is he back yet?
Off suspended? No, he's still suspended. I think he might be back for
Pittsburgh. This is the next game. I think the next game is his first game back. And he'll probably be inactive. So
yeah. I would think so. But yeah, it'll be interesting. What they do with the offensive line next year is gonna be a lot of fun. I think it's my turn to pick a player. I'm gonna go mm-hmm. with let's talk about Wiggins, because he really had one of his worst games of his career with the Ravens. Mm-hmm. It's incredible that after a game where he gives up 6 targets for 111 yards, he's still only at 6.6 yards per target for the year. He was in the fives. He was fantastic. And that this, you know, put a dent in that. But he allowed 18% of the total yards he allowed this season were in this game.
Mm.
And on just 6 targets. So, you look at the game, it looks even worse than that, but the 30-yard play where he was over the top, it looked like a cover 3 look where Humphrey didn't cover his man properly. He bit on a different route on Reed, was a play that he gave up. It's a Q3 13-37, if you want to look at that by timestamp out there.
Wiggins. I just need him to be fundamentally sound. That's it. With that speed, and he got an okay set of hands. I just need him to be fundamentally sound and not take chances. You are not Juice Man yet. You are not Marcus Peters mentally yet. Be fundamentally sound. Use your speed to your advantage and play the ball. You don't have to create the stuff like Marcus Peters did, because Marcus Peters don't have your skill set. Mm-hmm. So just trust what you were given naturally and play solid football. You don't have to be the hero. On defense, it's about 11 guys doing what they coach to do. And, you know, if you make a play, so be it. Like on Marlon's interception, that wasn't his job. He just happened to be in when the tip happened. So if you be where you're supposed to be, plays will come. You don't have to make the plays. You just have to make the plays when they come to you.
Would you have him chasing the way he's done some this season? And reportedly, he's been asking for this. He's been asking for the responsibility to go after the number one receiver. I like that personally, but would you have him doing that? Or would you just settle him down at right corner or left corner and have him hold down that spot?
I like him having that mentality. I don't know if he's that guy yet. I don't know if he's a guy to ask those questions yet because of, just look at the different receivers out there. Like, the different body types can do like a Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase don't have to outrun him. He just out physically. Mm-hmm. DK, out physically. AJ Brown, out physically. Now, there are smaller guys that he probably can cover, you know, like a Justin Jefferson. He might do well versus Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson, not physical. He just, to me, I would leave him on one side and just play our offense based off of it. Because Kyle, in my opinion, is the real chess piece.
Yep.
So just let Wiggins play that side and move Kyle around. And Wiggins, you do what your coach to do on those plays. And if ball comes to you, make a play.
I personally, I'd let him stay on the side with the X. So wherever the space budget is for that offense, he's responsible for covering. I think that's where his skill really is. And if they want to take the safety out of the play, I think they're doing you a favor with Wiggins on that side. In either way, if they try and run him deeper, they try and run the comeback, and it's probably going to be, you know, a set of both of those that they're going to be pairing against him on that side. But the big bodied receivers, he's one of the guys who can make the comeback and make a play on the football, and he can be very dangerous doing it. So if quarterbacks, they'll try it a couple of times and then they'll learn that they don't really want to. But a Keon Coleman and some of the big bodied receivers that are out there, I think he matches up very well against.
And the only guys I think that he can't cover are those guys with the outstanding vertical games, and those aren't always the big body receivers. You take a guy like a Jalen Waddle that can just climb the ladder, because you know him finding the ball ain't the greatest. It ain't Brandon Stevens level, but it ain't the greatest. And if you got a guy where you know he can go over their head or they can go over his head, he'll have a problem with that. But for the most part, he just play fundamental football and cover your guy. And if it's zone, read whatever keys it was.
All right. You got another player you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the disappearance of Malachi Starks. I just watching the game, and he was our number one pick. And I've been sitting here thinking it the whole time. We've been talking for over an hour now. I don't remember Starks doing much of anything.
Is that a bad thing or a good thing? He's a free safety. So in the worlds of Earl Thomas, that's a good thing. I thought he stayed out of trouble pretty effectively in this game.
It's good because we don't call your name for bad stuff. But it's also, I'm wondering, like, how are we using him? Like, is he just the in case of, like, stay deep in case stuff? So that's why we don't see him. Or are he just not in plays because we rotate Kyle to strong stuff and he's just kind of the weak side just in case some stuff happens. So I don't really know why he disappeared. I just know that I didn't call his name or don't even remember, like, ooh, good play Wiggins, or for that matter, bad play Wiggins. I guess he was out there like Bateman getting cardio.
That's a nasty thing to say, my friend. So he made two really nice downhill plays during the game, which were defensive wins right around the line of scrimmage. He made tackles on pass play, so that was positive. The one play where I saw him get involved, but I didn't like, was when he was covering Reed coming across, and that was the rub play on Gilman on that mesh concept. That was really the only time, and I don't really put that on him. I put it on Gilman because I think Gilman, his speed was not up to the task of staying with Watson to start with. And then he took a chance on and played chicken a little too long until it was too late. He actually got hit and turned around in the process, and it made you look like, you know, and somebody's watching the game just on TV thinks that's somebody else's coverage. They're looking at, I think it was Wiggins on that side of the field. It might've been Humphrey. One of the two.
Did you notice that Gilman took a terrible angle on the same play we were talking about Marlon Humphrey, but not containing? Did you notice Gilman's angle on that play as well?
Was it the run for the 12-yard gain on like a third and nine or something? Was it that or are you talking about a was it a run by Willis, or was it a pass of some sort?
It was a run by Willis.
Okay.
They put the tight end over, they blocked Tavius, and Marlowe became the end man on line of scrimmage.
Okay. So you say it was one of the two touchdowns, the 11 mm-hmm. of the 22. Mm-hmm. Like there should never be two of those in one game. but yeah. So
I want to say it was the first one. It was the first touchdown Malik Willis did, and because he fooled Marlowe when he pulled it out, and then Aloha was coming down. He saw Malik pull it, but his pursuit angle was absolutely terrible.
Yes, you're right.
Outran him as well.
Yeah, so I have a tight end one. That's Wiley, block 95, 44 and 12, bit inside on the fake mm-hmm. to lose contain. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it was a bad one. There haven't been enough good plays by Gilman to justify all the bad tackling for me. He's stripped the ball loose a couple of times, I think. He mm-hmm. had an interception, and he's been in position for others. So it's not been like that's bad. And I'm not one of these guys that he has to make every interception that he's in position to make, but I'd like him to make some of them. Mm-hmm. But he's definitely had some value on turnovers, and he had took the handoff on the Van Noy interception, but that's okay. Don't give him a lot of bonus points for that. but in general, I don't think there's been enough, and I'm ready to move on. I think if given what the Ravens already have in financial commitments to Marlon Humphrey, and the incremental amount they have to pay him is relatively small, I think I'd just go that direction and make him the other safety this next year. But that does change how you draft. I mean, the Ravens then have to really prioritize drafting a corner, which they probably need to anyway. Would you be upset if the Ravens draft a corner in the first round?
Yes.
Okay. What do you want to say?
Offensive line.
Offensive line.
Okay. Offensive line or defense or that one tech or that three tech that we talked about. We're talking defense.
You're okay. I mean, you talk about the offensive line. I mean, one thing I like going to the draft when you can do it is mm-hmm. I like to go in where you're kind of agnostic towards four or even five position groups in the first round. And that gives you the most flexibility. It means you can make the most out of your capital moving up or moving down. Mm-hmm. You're not forced into a choice based on where you're slotted and who's available. I much prefer that. And you're not like biting your fingernails all night waiting for the left tackle to fall to you, which by the way, that's the real strength of the Ravens going to this draft is they don't need an offensive tackle.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's a small sample size. I think Emory could be a guard if we lose a guard. And as far as when Ronnie decides to hang it up, I really think we do have his replacement.
That's good.
I love Vincent. I know he's raw right now, and he shows it. But Vincent has a finish about him. He has a dog mentality. And when he learns the techniques and he ain't got to be with Warhop teaching people how to hug folks, we're going to be all right.
I'm of the opinion they really should not mess with him in terms of a different position. So like Vincent may be ready to play off. Yeah. He may be ready to play guard next year, but they better not try and make him into a guard when the guy's got left tackle written all over him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leave him at tackle, even if he got to sit another year behind Ronnie.
Yeah.
But I would say that, you know, and I know we just talked about next year, but going forward, when we do blow people out, or if they blow us out, let him get some burn.
Okay.
Let him get some burn.
You're going to let him get some burn in week 18 or the playoffs this year?
No. Yeah. I'm saying for the future, if we blow people out or they blow us out, even if Ronnie don't decide to hang it up this year, mm-hmm. next year, you know, let him get something somewhere, some kind of meaningful snap somewhere.
Right. I sense from the fact that Ronnie's played better down the stretch. And he's also been very durable in the mm-hmm. second half of the year, which surprisingly so, because Vincent hasn't got any opportunity, and he's the first backup, and he's played six snaps or three snaps really when you that were competitive, three other mm-hmm. meals. He's going to get playing time eventually because one of those guys is going to lose it. But the fact that the Ravens have three guys that I think they can count on next year is just an unbelievable boon to be thankful for going into the draft.
Right. You ain't have to, like you said, bite your fingernails waiting on that left tackle to fall. You got some flexibility to do some other things, but you have to make sure you do your due diligence on whatever you don't go pick no lineman in the 6, 7, 8 round, because a lot of times them guys don't pan out. You can find you a skill guy maybe that late, but you're not going to find one of the hog maulers that that late that's going to be worth anything because they go early.
Okay. I mean, the Ravens have had some success with like players like Ryan Jensen and Wagner and others in those later rounds. I don't have a problem with them doing that. And the one way they might get a tackle late, and I don't know if you're talking about tackle guard or even center, they got Bradley Bozeman late. You know, mm-hmm. you got players who can help you there on the offensive line. I would be perfectly happy if they took a guard tackle in a later round, like round five or something. Somebody who can play tackle in an emergency in case you get two guys down next year mm-hmm. at some point. All right, I guess my turn, right? Yes. I don't remember who we were talking about there. But
we started with Travis. We went to Wiggins. And then I spoke on the free safety.
Gilman.
There you go. Okay. No, not Gilman.
Starks. There you go. Starks. And we talked about Gilman while we're at it. Let's mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about Humphrey. This was not a great game for Humphrey, despite the interception. But it is a great game for trying to figure out where Humphrey's going to be next year. And again, the Ravens need to figure out how best to use Humphrey this year. So I'm not saying they change it, but he's a guy. If they had a slot need somehow that they needed to fill with Humphrey the rest of the year, I just go ahead with Washington. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a need to go to Humphrey specifically to make the pieces fit by having Wiggins, Awuzie, and Humphrey all on the field. Mm-hmm. If they suddenly decided tomorrow we can't live with the play of Gilman anymore, and it hasn't been that bad, so we're not at that point. I wouldn't have any problem if they suddenly decided, like the 2012 playoff run, they made the big offensive line switcheroo. Mm-hmm. If they suddenly decided that Humphrey was their strong safety for the rest of the year,
I'm cool with that as well. And I honestly think he's along that mind frame because he knows he just flat out can't run with some of these guys anymore. Yep. So I'm cool with him doing that because he's a really good football player in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
Really good football player.
The physicality will play well there. Now, he hasn't been the greatest tackler. That needs mm-hmm. to improve some. But the physicality would play very well there. The off-man skills are terrific. He reads the quarterback very well, and it's gotten a mm-hmm. lot better as he's getting older. He's got 10 interceptions the last 2 years. A bunch of those are off-man interceptions. So yeah. I like his chances.
I think Marlon's tackling issues here lately have been part of his hand. So I'll give Marlon a little pass on that. Okay, and he even got his hand stepped on. He got his hand stepped on yesterday. So I'll give him a little pass on tackling because of his hand and the technique you do, especially to do it properly and grab claws and all that. But Gilman.
All right. There's some angles to Gilman that don't look good. You mentioned one, but I mean, game after game, we've seen problems with Gilman's angles on tackles that have been not great.
And being a guy that ain't fast, you better have proper angles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's safety. Absolutely. And you better have good instincts too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying he's terrible in that. It's just, they gave up an awful lot to get Gilman. And it seemed to be a big hole filler at the time. And now, you know, we're already talking about what other ways could they fix it next year.
I think Gilman's greatest asset has been his communication. His communication to transfer stuff to Starks or to get it on the other side of the field or to get people lined up because I know it's not the exact same, but it's you coming under this same tree. So the defense probably ain't called too much different. So that's probably why he picked it up so fast. But the fact that he's able to come in and communicate with other guys, but also allow Kyle to go do other things has been his greatest asset. He ain't been balls to the wall or nothing. He just been out there. And so, like you said, the touchdown from Van Noy, you just got to be younger than Van Noy to get that touchdown. That's all he did on that. So then Owe got 8 freaking sacks.
Yeah.
So
people didn't realize what we had with Owe. And the change of scenery was part of it, but frankly, it's not just that. It's not just like the scheme changed away from an 8-sack guy to from a 0-sack guy to an 8-sack guy. Owe had 10 sacks last year. He had a really high close rate for the Ravens last year. It was scary because his pressure rate was actually a little bit low. Mm-hmm. Before then, in his career, he'd always been a great pressure percentage guy who had a problem closing. I think that people didn't realize exactly what the Ravens had with Owe and exactly how valuable he was. And I think it's a trade the Ravens would like to have back right now. If they did, you know, Draymond Jones has been terrific. Maybe we'll talk about him next, but you know, he hasn't been Elway, frankly, for these last few weeks.
Agreed. I never thought I'd say that. Never. But that is who I wanted to talk about for my next one, is Draymond Jones. And I was wondering if, you know, his physicality, his demeanor has put a little juice in that defensive room, because he's a Jahard Ward attitude type player to me. And you need some of those. And I feel like, you know, our upper level management coaching didn't like kind of guys that would bark back at you. And I think he's one of those guys, but he's fitting in fine, and he's brought a little juice to that room. He had been great, but then you add Tavius back, you can see some things kind of going together. And we like we said, health is the biggest thing right now. For the most part, I think we're fairly healthy. And if we can put some stuff together this week and have some momentum going forward, I like our chances versus the way the NFL has went this year. If we can get in, I like our chances. Despite how bad the offenses look sometimes, despite how bad the defenses look sometimes, just give me a chance. And you never know.
I love the flexibility that Draymond has brought the team. Inside, outside flexibility is something they didn't have there for a number of weeks when Tavius was hurt. Now Tavius is back, and having two movable chess pieces like that on the line of scrimmage is really, really nice. Tavius, I think he's a player who I think has well outplayed his PFF grades in terms of his usefulness to the team to fill a lot of important roles that they just don't have an easy way to fill. Like, who's the extra guy they put in on the inside on dime packages? Who's the guy they can trust most to set the edge on early downs? I mean, they had four situational pass rushers basically before he returned. So I've been very excited about him, and it's not that Jones is bad or anything.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
As a situational passer, he's got a ton of quarterback hits already for the Ravens. In fact, it looked like he was going to come up short of the two sacks necessary for that draft pick to be bumped up around. You know, it gets bumped up to a four instead of a five. And now if the Ravens, the other part of that is the Ravens have to make the playoffs. If the Ravens win next week, I'm not going to care at all about the fact that draft pick is bumped up a notch.
Exactly. A lot of stuff go out the window then, because like I said, if you get in, the whole thing changes. Like your attention to detail changes, and it shouldn't, but it does. Your attention to detail changes, your willingness to watch another hour of tape when you didn't watch six. You go to bed on time when you're supposed to. You eat right. Everything amps up in the playoff because you can see the prize. You can see the prize ahead of you, and you just go harder, so to speak. You're looking at, okay, we really got a chance to win the Super Bowl, which is the ultimate thing in football. And so you do everything in your power to win it. And that's why it hurts so bad when you don't.
When you're playing 5A level, or I guess it was 5A in Florida, you coached that at one point?
Yes, 5A, yes.
Okay, so how long were the bus rides to get to some of your furthest opponents?
Not very far here.
Okay.
Back home, yes. But here, we play a lot of, we have five local high schools, so we played all of them. I think our longest bus ride, we took one bus ride to Middle Florida, and that was about 5.5 hours. But for the most part, everything else was right across town or, you know, something simple. But when I was in Mississippi, we had a 5-hour district game. My city is on the Mississippi River. We had a district game in a town that borders Alabama.
Borders Alabama. It says the other side of the strait.
Total opposite side of the state.
So were you in Vicksburg, or where? I've traveled along the Route 61 there.
My hometown is 60 miles south of Vicksburg on the same highway.
What's the name of it?
Natchez.
Natchez. Okay, I've been through there. Natchez, Mississippi. Sure.
Yeah.
And we've been at Natchez, Philadelphia. Meridian is in the
Meridian is the other town.
Okay.
Meridian is the town that was a district game for us, and it's exactly on the other side of the state.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. Yeah, that would be a drive, wouldn't it? That's a tall state. You don't really realize how long it's going to take you to go from the my wife and I, on one of our first Christmases together, took a gambling trip through all the casinos in eastern Mississippi and all the way down to New Orleans and Biloxi.
Natchez, Vicksburg. Did you go to Philadelphia?
We didn't. I didn't that trip. I've been since. But yeah, okay. And we went up to as far
Tunica, maybe?
Well, we started in Tunica, essentially. Okay. We got off at Memphis, but then drove up the what's the one that's on a levee there? There's a casino that's right on a levee. I want to say it's called the Cotton Club or something, but it's built literally. You park your car and the water is almost like lapping up against your tires.
What city is in?
I'd have to look again to figure out where this.
They have to be on the water.
Yeah.
They have to be on the water. That's why they're on the river or down on the coastline. With the exception of Philadelphia.
Yep.
That's the only one because of the Indian reservation stuff. But other than that, they have to be on the water. And if it's the river's high, you could get that. You can get that.
I'm amazed my wife is still with me after that because we stayed in some unbelievably lousy hotels on that trip.
No 5 stars in Mississippi.
There's some really nice places in Mississippi, but the places around casinos that we were willing to pay for in that day were pretty cheap. So it was on us. It was my fault. All right. Let's I think we better get onto the mailbag if that's okay.
Okay.
With you.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. So we'll start off with Brett Hammonds has a question. The corners looked like they are consistently 6 to 8 yards away from the receiver on comeback routes. Did this look more like bad execution by the corners or very conservative scheme?
For me, I think it's conservative scheme. I think we're really bend and don't break. I think we're terrified to go man on people a lot. And then, you know, we play a lot of zone. People know that. And they know that cover two or two man, not two man, Tampa two is what we kind of fall back into. And they have a lot of plays schemed up for that. So what I think we do is we'll give up the 4, 5, 6 yard route. In our mind, we're going to tackle you. And then once you get in the 30 or the 20 in red zone, we're going to hold you to a field goal. So we just play conservative not to give up the big plays. And I think the mind frame is play conservative, keep the top on it, and they'll make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they don't make a mistake. Well, a lot of times the offense don't make a mistake.
I guess I have two kind of responses to this question. The first is that, the Ravens played a variety of defenses, but when they're in zone, you always kind of look soft. The announcer brought up a really good point during the game is there were a number of extended plays by Willis in this game. Mm-hmm. When they had extended plays, the Ravens did not do a good job of converting their zone into man. And you could talk about this, coach, maybe in terms of what the rules are, but all plays that start as zone eventually convert to man as the play goes on for 4 or 5 seconds there. You better be plastered mm-hmm. to somebody. You better be sticky in coverage on the guy you got last right. during that process.
In my eyes, even though you call zone, it's still man. You just got to play man on that person in your zone. So once they come in your zone, like you said, you got to plaster them and stay in them. And then once you pass them off, you can't just pass them off without some kind of communication. You right. got to let them know, hey, you know, somebody come out, whatever your terminology is that y'all decided on, in, out, out, whatever it is, you got to let somebody know and you got to communicate. But to me, zone is man when they come in your zone, especially if you do some match stuff. Now, match is more, got more man principles in it. If you just playing country cover three, mm-hmm. you got to cover that man that's in your zone while he's in your zone. And that's, right. to me, that's man. And but if you just let him run free, you'll get dimed up.
Every second that play goes on, though, the chance of you successfully passing off your man to a different zone goes way down.
Yes.
So you better be in a position to do that. And I had a second point on this, and I kind of forgot it in that discussion, but this was the more important one. So appreciate the question, Brett. Thanks for chiming in. We got one from Voss here. Now, this is an interesting one. Voss is my partner on Friday Morning GM, as people know. He says, is Zach Orr the worst defensive coordinator in Ravens team history?
I can't answer that. I still have faith in that. I do. I know he's thrown some duds. But he could still be a good coordinator and still be the worst one the Ravens have had, because mm-hmm. we've had some good ones. Oh, is he the worst? I got to defer to you, Ken, on that one.
The bar is very high. The probably the mm-hmm. lowest thought of, if you saw all the names at once, you'd pick up Madison as the guy who was here for 2 years, isn't really highly thought of, and yet probably the Ravens were probably the third ranked defense in the NFL both of his years or something, you know, because it was Lewis and Reed years. But you know, the guys, they've been so good. I mean, Pagano was here a year. Mm-hmm. Dean Pease, a lot of people don't like Dean Pease, but Dean Pease was here 6 years, mm-hmm. and the Ravens were damn successful during that period defensively. They fell apart offensively in the second half of Flacco's tenure here, mm-hmm. but they were successfully defensively, and they I think Martindale had a lot of qualities I liked, just the same way Rex Ryan did. Mm-hmm. I think that Marvin Lewis was tremendously adaptable to his circumstance, so I like him a lot. Nolan was only briefly the defensive coordinator, but the Ravens were awfully good when he was, from 2002 mm-hmm. to 2004. So, you know, he's another guy I wouldn't put down there. And then you have McDonald, who was a tough start too, mm-hmm. kind of like Orr. And Orr got it figured out at the end of last year. Orr at times this year has been pretty good. The bar is really high. Yeah. The bar is really high. So, you know, if you're looking for us to impale ourselves on the question, Voss, I would say, I might say yes, just with the understanding that the bar is extremely high. I'm not saying give up on Zach Orr.
I agree. That's a great answer. Yeah, I would say yes, but I still got faith in Zach, because the bar is. And tell me what you think about this, Ken. Those guys that were the coordinators in the Reed Lewis era, mm-hmm. do they get a little bump up because of how good Reed and Ray Lewis were? Because you could be an average coordinator, but you got them two guys that, and you know, that kind of runs this show, and it makes you look great.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Ravens have always invested more in defense, so they're generally, their coordinators have looked pretty good from that perspective. Yes, but I also really think that Marvin Lewis, who was pre-Reed, but in the mm-hmm. Lewis era, Bull, where all the free agents, the Woodson and Siragusa and Adams and McCrary, are all during the Marvin Lewis era, basically. He went beyond that in terms of what he brought to that defense by making such great use of defensive backs, and the quarter package in particular they used a lot of. Each one of them is special to me in some way. Mm-hmm. And Madison is the one guy who wasn't here long enough to make a real impression upon me as being more than kind of a tofu defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the guys, they all did something special. Pagano had the secondary, and Arthur Jones playing at a high level. And Dean Pease didn't want to blitz. And he was basically the exact opposite of Rex Ryan in terms of a guy who thought, I'm going to start by playing a soft zone and see if you can throw against it. Mm-hmm. And then he made adjustments as needed. He would adjust to the quarterback he's playing. So they've all been good in some important way. And I think, or the thing I would point to this year that I've really liked about him is, when he's dealt a bunch of crappy hands, you still got to play him. Yep. And, you know, he dealt a crappy hand on the defensive line with the Matabike injury, and he's learned how to play with 3 and 4 nose tackles in games. Mm-hmm. That's really impressive. And they stopped the run effectively doing it. You know, I think he's been dealt a hand that was supposed to be 4 aces in the secondary, and he turned out to be 4 aces.
You're right.
I don't think he's got one joker, and that's it. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You know, Joker is good. All right, let's move on. We don't want to give that question too much credence here. Cars ruin cities. Do you see Ardarius Washington replacing Gilman at some point this season? Really interesting question.
I'm going to say no. If it hasn't happened yet, I don't think it will, barring injury.
So let's say you've got 3 players for 2 spots. Mm-hmm. And let's say you're deciding you're going to go with Wiggins and Awuzie on the outside, because Awuzie, by the way, we didn't talk about him, but he played pretty well in this last game. Definitely stayed out of trouble. But if you could decide those guys are your outside corners, and then you're left with Humphrey, Washington, and Gilman for your other 2 spots, strong safety and slot corner and dime. That's all you got room for. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do you align those guys?
Marlon at slot. I'll stick with Gilman at safety. And if something happens to one of those corners, Ardarius can come in and be slot, and then you push Marlon outside.
Okay. All right, because that's not exactly where they are now. Now that really seems like Ardarius is the guy they want to bring in and dime most of the time. But this last game, it was a lot of Awuzie being brought in as a sixth defensive back, despite the fact that they were moving Humphrey effectively to that weak side spot.
And I also would say it depends on the personnel. If they got an outside, if they're running you three legit receivers, I would think you'd want to have three legit corners for the two outsides and the nickel. But if they kind of give you something where it's like like we do, we give you spread personnel, but we give you two tight ends with Likely and Mark, I think Ardarius would be more suited for that, because as small as he is, he still gets real physical with those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think the only people that really can like abuse Ardarius are, like I spoke earlier, you high-pointing balls on him because he's so short. But Ardarius has the ability, and we've seen it last year. I think on his interception versus Houston, somebody, he went up and got a ball. So he can play above the rim as well himself to be a smaller guy.
Yeah, he plays a lot bigger than his size. I completely agree. One more question I'd ask on that is, we see most teams in the NFL run 3-by-1 sets now. And meaning that to Coach is exactly what I'm talking about here, but it's typically three guys on the right side, one guy to the left side. Your left side, because most teams are right-handed and they want the tight end on the right side, they run their running game that way. All their scheme is dealt with at that tight end being on the right side. Then they have the slot guy, maybe a flex tight end, or maybe a wide receiver. Then you have two outside receivers with three and one on the two sides. There are teams that are perfectly effective running 2-by-2. And there are, of course, a lot of times during a game, a lot of times, 8 snaps a game, you'll face against a 500 look where there'll be 5, 3, and 2 usually on the two sides of your formation. Are the Ravens with Hamilton a team that if you're coaching against them, you'd be actively trying to split your receivers 2 and 2 to at least get one favorable side matched up without Hamilton affecting the three-man side?
Ooh, great question. So what I would do is, in my first 15, I'm going to give you probably 12 different formations.
Scripted plays.
Yes. Okay. So I, as a play caller, can figure out where Hamilton's going to be on certain situations. Now, I know defensive calls change, but that gives me a good idea where he'll line up based off of what the formation I come out in. And then once I figure out where he is, and like if I can run stuff away from him. So if I go like three tight ends to the right with under center, and he lines up to those three tight ends to the right, I'm sorry, the three receivers to the right, I'm probably gonna run some kind of stretch away. Yeah. Just, you know, and if they keep giving me that look, I'm gonna keep running stretch away as long as it's you know, they ain't got somebody on the edge that's killing me. But I'm going to, in that first 12 to 15 plays, I'm gonna figure out where you want to line him up, and I'm gonna run my run plays based off where he ain't.
Okay.
Because he has an incredible knack for blowing up offensive linemen at that small frame.
How's that look? It's just an incredible leverage he uses. And Coach, you're younger than me by a significant amount, so you might not have actually ever seen Ten Hendricks play live. See him? Okay. So that's the guy. Take a look at Ted Hendricks on some old film, maybe tonight or whenever you get the chance. And that's a guy who played at 6'7". And when he came to the Colts originally, he was 212 pounds, 210 pounds. Think about being that kind of size and being, you know, an outside linebacker, basically. Made the Hall of Fame, but the most incredible leverage player you ever seen. Hamilton uses his length to incredible degree to get leverage against offensive linemen. That is, I've never seen in a player, in a safety, let's put it that way.
Would it, outside? Oh yeah. 6'7", 220. Okay. I got it. I look at it when we finish.
All right. Very cool.
I just wanted to make sure I had the right person before I got away from you.
But yeah. So started his career with the Colts, and they played 5 years here, but he's basically known for playing with the Raiders for a couple championship teams. All right. We've got the next question is from Prof Boggs. Prof Boggs, thanks again. Oh, I don't know if I know this play. At 11:51 in the third quarter, did you notice the miscommunication in the secondary? Any idea what was going on? I apologize, Prof Boggs. I didn't look at this play. I'll see if I've got it in my notes here and see what was going on here.
Let's see if we can find it.
Real it was a okay. So here's what I have: 3rd and 9, initially 5-0 rush, 98 beats center, 75 inside, 41 grabs 2, but missed tackle at -2. 2 regains balance, forces missed tackle, 44 at 6 for RM 12 conversion, and 44 hand stepped on. So it's a play he got that Humphrey got stepped on.
Okay,
12 yard conversion, and if you can find that in terms of what the miscommunication was, that'd be cool.
Okay, they ran a draw, so it's a draw. And we have, I think we have one of those few stunts you talked about, maybe.
Let me see if I've got
that. Yeah, it's a stunt with Travis and Roquan.
Let's see on the, okay, right. I'm sorry. It's on a 12-yard play. It's on a 12-yard run play in the end. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't classify it as a stunt because it didn't end in a run, a pass or sack. But otherwise, I'm sure you're right.
Yeah, I think it was a draw. They ran a stunt. Jones missed what should have been a tackle for loss or a tackle right at the line of scrimmage. I think that's Jones.
It's 41. Yep.
Uh-huh. And then Marlon missed a tackle, got his hand stepped on. Yeah. And so what was the question again?
The question was, if he's talking about some sort of miscommunication here. It was 3rd and 9. It looks like you say it was a draw. It's a scramble is what you mean, right? It looks like a pass.
I thought it was a draw. I could be wrong, but looking at the end zone view, I thought he did the what I would consider the draw action.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
I got to take another look at it. All right, Prof, I'm sorry we won't have your question right here, but I'm going to try and answer that in a 1 to 3 minute video this week for you. And maybe you want to do one, Coach, on that play if you've got the on Sip to Tally films.
Yeah, I think it's a draw. And I'm because he don't even look downfield like talking about.
Okay.
And so the miscommunication in the back end is they bagged out to, they just bagged out and gave him a free release. I don't see them in the miscommunication because we playing man.
Okay.
Playing cover one. So I'm not sure what the miscommunication was, but we were playing cover one and they get out of it. And maybe, Ken, maybe it is a pass. Maybe whatever his first read was, they took it away. He just decided to rush. Mm-hmm. But it could be a draw. From the steps. And the reason I say it's a draw, whenever you go back to look at it, just look at his steps. He don't even really take like traditional quarterback drop. He just take a step back and then start going forward.
I'll take a look at that. There's no doubt about Huntley's 2 draw plays in a row that were real successful, but
right.
I'll take a look for some of those same things. I had it, I was scoring it up as if it were going to be a pass play. And the what I'm talking about, the initial 5-0 rush and whatnot was just trying to describe that. So that's interesting if you've got it that way. Let me move on. Igretch. I think he's ISG also, but Igretch is what I have here as his at. Over the season, have the offense or defense been more responsible for the losses?
Mm. Ooh, I think it's equal, Igretch. I think beginning of the season, the defense was the culprit for us losing. And I think the defense figured it out. Then the offense went to crap. And they were the reason we lost some games. So I think it's equal blame for the – because I still don't think we've played a game where offense and defense have – and special teams have complemented each other the entire game.
Wow.
I still don't.
I'm trying to think of what game that would be. Have they really won a game big where they got anything from all three units?
Maybe the first Cleveland game. Maybe.
Yeah. Even that one, it was in jeopardy. It was in jeopardy in early in the fourth quarter, late in the third quarter, maybe, before the Ravens kind of broke it open.
I can't recall us being solid on all three phases of the game. And the special teams ain't been great all year, but
no.
I think I can't recall offense and defense being complementary to each other.
Right.
There have been spurts where they've been complimentary to each other, but not full games.
Yeah. All right. I have some MVPs to name, and I forgot to ask you to come up with a 3-2-1 MVP list. Coach, if you want to play along, you can. If you don't want to, I understand, and I'll go through my list real quickly here, and you can toss in anybody else you might like as a addition.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to have too much in terms of differences anyway. My number 3 guy is Draymond Jones. So another game with another quarterback hit. He's been good with that. Had some pressure. A lot of it was wasted pressure that ended up being on scrambles, including the play we were just talking about at Q3 1151. Mm-hmm. It's not that there weren't good things about the game. I'll tell you what, this was a hard game to find MVPs on defense just because there weren't a lot of players who didn't have multiple warts from the game. Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking since that you've explained to me how he's doing it, I'm going to second up you with my number three being Draymond Jones as well. And thinking about it, we probably about to have the same list.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Do you want to tell me your number two guy then?
My number two guy would be Tavius Robinson.
Tavius Robinson. Okay. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I didn't have
him on my list. Not numbers wise, but impact wise. And his effort, because he didn't have a lot of numbers, but it's just his presence being in there, and you have to commit resources to Tavius because his motor is nonstop. And if you don't, he will effort you in plays. He ain't got the greatest skill set. He ain't got the greatest moves. His effort is unmatched, and I love it.
You know, he was at the podium this summer, and he said, he was asked the question. I think that the PR guys asked it because they knew what the answer was. He apparently had an incredible streak going of having never missed a practice going all the way back into high school. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how hard that is. Think about the number of people on the injury report every single list, but never missed one. And mm-hmm. then, of course, he was out for a couple of weeks this year. But unbelievable effort guy. And when they lost him, he was leading the entire front five in snaps played. He had almost 100 more snaps than Travis Jones when they lost him, mm-hmm. Which is just incredible to me.
That's wild, and I love him for his effort. I think he's going to develop into a really good player.
See, a guy you would go and try and sign this offseason early?
Oh yeah, for okay. me, yes. Get him before he hits that actual glow up, mm-hmm. and that way you have him on a team friendly, but enough for him because he hadn't done nothing yet. Mm-hmm. But I would definitely go after him and lock him down because I can see the potential there.
You get maybe $8 million per year, that kind of number we'd be looking at if we signed it for 4 years. You'd be okay with that? Maybe a 4 year extension, $8 million starts in year five, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because that'll see, he's not a first rounder, so he's 4 year of team control, and he's probably in year three.
He's in year three right now, right? So it's just the earliest he could be signed is after the season, mm-hmm. and then they have to use the franchise tag after year four if he's. I don't think they're going to do that, so.
Gotcha.
All right. I would love for that. I'm gonna go with a different number two guy, and I'll stay with my chalk answer was Malachi Starks. I thought this is a game that he kept himself out of difficulty, made two nice downhill plays. I didn't think he did a lot back on the back end. I had another reserve just in case you took Starks as your number two guy, which I'll mention as an honorable mention at the end of this.
So do I need for me go number one?
Yeah, go number one.
Oh, Travis Jones.
Oh, we got the same list now.
Travis Jones is, well, we talked about him enough to just not have to repeat some of the same stuff, but I love what Travis brings. I love what he's developed into. I love the humbleness. I love that gentle giant, man. He's playing some good football.
Yeah. Exciting player, and I cannot even convey to you how large the guy is in person because you really don't get a sense. I mean, CJ Okoye looks big, and he is. He's 370 pounds, and he's 6'6", and you notice how long his arms are when he goes down there. Travis Jones looks like an ordinary defensive lineman. He's not. He's 6'5", 341, roughly. Mm-hmm. And if when you see the guy is just proportioned in a way that just bulges out of everywhere is all I can describe. So he's a remarkably large, powerful man. Brent Urban has been on the show before. He's talked in glowing terms about how Travis Jones is the one guy who can cross the face of a guard and just put one hand onto the opposing player. It's like a tree trunk hitting you.
Long arm is awesome. When he decides to do it and he can press it out, mm-hmm. You just see the offensive lineman just trying to reach and grab for something. and you see him just flail and trying to grab him for some reason. But when he gets it and can get it extended, it's almost like he's just holding somebody there waiting on him to see what happens. His technique has gotten a lot better. His football IQ has gotten better, and he's developing this hunt move, this old Reggie White hunt move that if he catch you off guard, he may flip.
Yeah. Definitely a guy who is tasting blood as a pass rusher, and I just love that. You talk about motor players. I mean, he never wants to take a snap off. They don't take him out of the game, but he doesn't want to take a snap off.
Agreed.
My extra honorable mention guy is Chidobe Awuzie. A terrific game in terms of staying out of trouble himself, too, and that's not something most of the corners did. Most everybody else in the secondary had problems other than Malachi in this game. So he was my extra guy. Any other honorable mentions on your hand?
I would go Awuzie, and not just on this game. Awuzie has, in my opinion, had a great past 3 weeks. A textbook, I can't remember which game it was, but did not panicking when the ball comes, playing receivers' eyes, playing in receivers' hands, not contacting receivers when balls are in the air. He's done a great job of just not panicking, showing veteran poise and not panicking when the balls come.
He's made himself a couple bucks, I think. Mm-hmm. The Ravens got him cheap, and he's the perfect Ravens guy that Tennessee's paying his salary this year, other than the vet minimum the Ravens have to pay him. They won't be that lucky next year, and unfortunately, it's one of the reasons why I think they're going to have to invest a little money or cap one or the other in the corner position.
And Tampa will have to play a huge role.
Yeah.
Huge role.
The year three for Tampa, are you concerned about that at all in terms of him being the guy?
Oh, this three for Tampa?
Yeah, three coming up. This is two. This is next year for Tampa.
Oh, no, I think this projects about right, because with Nate being as good as he is, Tampa was kind of like that extra pick. And so, you know, if Marlon moves inside, you got a guy that can end the competition. I'm going to just say end the competition.
And two names we haven't talked about that I think are also in the competition for next year are Longer Beam and Kone, who are on IR this year. Very unfortunate to have two draft picks go down like that, but hopefully one of those guys at least is a player and is warrants making the team next year. So, you know, the Ravens get some return on that.
You bring up Longer Beam and Kone, and I'm going to stop after this. What about as far as that second safety, Kane? How you feel about Kane?
He's gone now, so I don't know that they have any chance to get him back. So he got claimed by...
He went to Tennessee. Sure did. He went to Tennessee. Sure did.
Yeah, claimed or signed, one or the other. I think he got signed off the...
He got signed off the practice squad. Yes, he sure did. So I remember them talking about all the different Ravens players that are at Tennessee. Yes, my bad.
This is that time of year when all these futures contracts get signed and your whole practice squad is at risk. And the Ravens always seem to lose a lot of players to this kind of thing. They lost Dellinger earlier this year. They had a couple. They had chances to bring him back. Yeah, Braid was another one. Armour Davis, they really wanted to keep. I mean, I think that could have helped the Ravens this year if they'd had Armour Davis around for the year. But
I think he had a decent preseason too. Mm-hmm. I think he had a decent preseason, and that's probably why he is not there.
Yeah. All right. Well, Coach, just a pleasure to talk football, as always is. Thank you so much for making the time on a busy day there. I hope we have 5 or 6 more weeks of football still left in us. Tell folks where they can find you, talk to you online or find your channel.
On Twitter, I'm Coach Evans 9. You can find me over there, ask a question. For the most part, I'll probably answer it. As far as on the social media places, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram is Sip the Tally Films. And then I also have a second YouTube channel that's called More Sip the Tally. And that focuses on the 31 other teams in the NFL.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, really appreciate all of the loyalty and the little things you send me, telling me how many total hours of content you've listened to of mine in the last year. I love those and really appreciate it. Makes me want to work that much harder. If you have questions, use hashtag Film Study Mailbag, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Coach, thanks a lot.
Enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
All right. Always my pleasure. We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.